Welcome back to Solano Moms Building Community Podcast, where we spotlight the people making a difference for our families, our community, our schools, and our future. Today, we're honored to sit down with Anna Pitero, a woman whose life is a testament to service, resilience, and empowering communities through education. Anna was elected to the Fairfield Sassoon Unified School District Governing Board in 2020. Originally from Fiji, Anna immigrated to the United States in 1976 and has called Fairfield home for over 20 years. She is a proud mother of five, a grandmother, and a lifelong educator serving as a communication studies professor and former speech and debate coach at Solano Community College. Coming from a long line of teachers, Anna believes passionately that investing in education is investing in our future. And she has made that her life's work to serve students and families with dedication and heart. In addition to her work in education, Anna gives back through her involvement with the Solano Commission for Women and Girls, the Solano County Master Plan on Aging, and Fairfield's Adopt a Street program. In this conversation, we'll explore Anna's journey from Fiji to Fairfield, her passion for building stronger schools, her advocacy for women, youth, and seniors, and why community involvement matters more than ever. Get ready to be inspired by a woman who truly leads by example and reminds us all that real change starts with education, compassion, and service. I would like to welcome my co-host, as usual, Patty Phillips.
Hi, Miriam. Great to be back again.
I know. I'm so glad I've seen you twice this week. Last month, I didn't see you at all. I had missed you.
Well, yeah, you were in Texas, and I was in Seattle.
Oh, so. Yeah. We are both traveling.
But today, I rode my bike to visit. So.
I know. Today, we are doing our recording right here. I have some allergies going. How's your allergies?
I don't have allergies. Thank God.
Well, lucky you.
It's springtime.
Yes. And today, we have an amazing guest, and I think it's appropriate for Patty to introduce this wonderful guest.
Well, we would be honored today to welcome Anna Pitero. She is the president of the Fairfield Sassoon Unified School District Governing Board. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, thank you for being here. We're really honored. When I Google your name, you're literally, you do everything. That's why I had to email you, what title should I use? Because you're in Women Commission, your board is school board for one place. How do you do all this? But before that, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what led you to serve on the school board?
Thank you very much again. Well, let me preface my comments by saying that as a school board president, I'm speaking here as an individual and I don't represent the board, but I want to really, really thank you all for the invitation. I'm originally from Fiji, and our greeting word there is Nisambula Vinaka. I'm also Tongan. Our greeting word is Malo Elele. I've been in this country since 1976, when Jimmy Carter was starting to be president, was going to be president, and I have been here since then, 49 years. I attended San Francisco State University, but I'm a product of the community college system. I attended Chabot College. And I've always wanted to be an English teacher, an eighth grade English teacher. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, I joined the speech and debate team, and that's where I learned to love, you know, communicating and arguing, making arguments. And so when I went to college, I wanted to be a linguist, went to graduate school, wound up being a speech and communication, because my husband also teaches speech communication. Oh. We coached a speech and debate team together at Solano College for about 16 years. He coached before that. And then when our children graduated from Solano College and from the speech and debate team, I retired from speech and debate, and I came into the school board. And what made me want to run for the school board is, as a college professor teaching, I found over the years, particularly in the last, I would say, 15 years, is that when I'm lecturing, students often say, is this going to be on the test? And then I started thinking, no, and look, let's learn the context, a certain content. And then the more recently, the last 10 years, more and more, I hear, is this going to be on the test? Is this going to be on the test? And then I started wondering, what on earth are they teaching in the K-12 system? if they're asking what's going to be on the test? And that kind of was the impetus for me running as well. Also, as we, in 2016, we passed a bond, to the Measure J bond. And I wanted to make sure, I wanted to know where that money is going to be spent. It was $249 million. So those are the kind of the reasons why I ran for school board, to see what I can contribute in order to build our students, build our future. Because I fundamentally believe that educating our children, investing in education, is investing in our retirement. Mm-hmm. So these students, are, you know, young people are capable of taking care of me when I get old. So those are the reasons why I ran for school board.
Makes total sense to me.
Oh, yes. Some of the reasons why I ran.
No, it really makes sense, because even when I was growing, there was times that I thought, just like you said, what is going to be on the test? And instead of really knowing the material and studying and becoming a, you know, when you study, it's an investment, like you said. Yes. You make better decisions, especially history or these things. But I'm glad that you saw that most people were doing it for the test score. And now having someone like you on board can make us, Patty and you were talking before the podcast started, making it fun, and learning could be fun for these kids than just a grade.
Absolutely. Learning should be enjoyable. And I think language has a lot to do with it, how we speak to our students, you know, using positive reinforcement. We tend to use punitive language with students. If you do this, this bad thing's going to happen, as opposed to if you do this, this good thing's going to happen. You know, and so I think it just starts there in terms of what we do to cultivate our children to positively. Because if you look, every child has so many talents. And what we do, instead of quashing that talent, we say, okay, you have to do this order, color within the box.
Yes.
right?
Yes. And
stay within the lines. And then they get to college and we're saying, think outside the box. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. You know? But if you look at the children's talents, they'll tell you whether they are artistic or they are academic or whatever it is that they want to go. And then we take that, whatever that talent is, and marry that to the curriculum. Mm-hmm. Right?
And with a smile.
Right? Absolutely.
This is fun. We're enjoying this. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the test.
Yes.
Down the road.
Yes. Because if they do that, they can apply that to the test. I'll give you an example. I had one of my friend's child was at Rodriguez High School. And she was taking chemistry class, and she didn't do very well in that chemistry class. It was very hard for her to understand the material.
I can understand that.
But when she left high school, she went to esthetician school. And there she learned how to do facials and all that. And that's all chemistry. And she loved it and thrived.
Wow.
Now, not only does she have her own business, she makes makeup products that are hypoallergenic. All of that's chemistry. Wow. So I'm thinking, if they took chemistry and applied it, so if you want to be a stylist, here's how chemistry applies to hair color. You know, if you want to do this, this is how chemistry applies to that. So say, oh my gosh, I would love that. Instead of saying, because sometimes we operate our classes in silos. You're teaching this class, you're teaching this class. How does this class relate to my life?
Yeah. Yeah, so much of that comes from the state.
Yes.
Because the teachers, especially, well, I started to say especially elementary, but I think it goes throughout,
yes,
are forced to administer those tests. And so they want to make sure the students do well.
Right.
So sometimes I think we focus too much on that rather than just learning and loving the learning.
Right. And in that process, if you're able to apply that, when you get the test, you'll see how that is applicable.
There
and
you
you'll
go.
Pass the test because you can conceptualize it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
right.
when we're learning just lines and just information, facts, and they can't contextualize it, and conceptualize it, then it's hard to remember. It's like, what is your frame of reference? How does it apply to you?
Yeah, I've
right?
often thought about, when I was teaching, I've thought about, you have to have sort of a coat rack in your mind. If you have this coat rack, and you have something, like a thing that sticks out from the coat rack that you can hang the new information on that connects to something you already understand, then you can remember.
Yes, absolutely. What is your frame of reference, right? How does it apply to me? Oh, I can understand. Like before we started, we were talking about a music teacher mm-hmm. who taught me, she understood that my background is in speech, so she was able to apply music dynamics to speech, and she said it's like how you speak in a sentence, how you, or in a paragraph, right? You, some words are elongated, some words are punctuated, where do you pause? And I went, that to me, she knew my background, she knew my frame of reference, so she was able to apply music and the dynamics of music to how I understand it, and I've never forgotten that.
Right? That's brilliant, actually.
Yes, that's a sign of a good teacher.
Absolutely.
What does your role as board president involve on a day-to-day basis?
I have to respond to emails within 24 hours. That's the most important
actually,
thing.
You're very good with your emails.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And I try to respond to people to make them feel valued. Like, I hear you. I understand what you're saying. And let me help direct you. And then, so that's a lot of it. And then, so we direct them to the superintendent, and then she and her staff are able to help the, whoever, whatever the situation is. But I also want to make sure that they care, as opposed to saying, I received your email, thank you. It's very cold. Yeah. It's like talking to a customer service, instead of talking to a customer service representative, you're talking to a voicemail.
A bot,
yes, right?
Yes. I actually, it's funny you say that, because actually I was telling my husband when I was emailing you back and forth, I said she's so proper and she wants to make sure you feel, every time I send something, Anna sent me back and made sure to confirm that. So thank you for doing that.
Oh, yeah,
I did feel it. My point is, I did feel how you want people to be heard or seen. I felt that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
I appreciate that. So those are one of the things that I do. I also, I just took this on myself, and that's to be in the community, to see what's going on. Every Friday, I pick up trash, and I've been doing this for the last 7 years. And so it's trying to gauge what's happening in the community. I also attend sporting events when I can, and then hang around among the people. And then also, I just, when I see students, and I have students in my neighborhood, I ask them how their day was going. And so they come and tell me how things are doing, how going. And they tell me their favorite teachers and the like. And I, what I do is I call them, I give them a shout out at the school board meetings during my opening statement.
That's awesome.
You know, because your teachers, it's a thankless job, right? And I said, every once in a while, they probably think, wonder what the student's doing now, what that student's doing now. And to, when students come in and just share that, it means so much to them, right? So that's one of the things. This morning, I went to, before I came here, I was supposed to go to the school board, to the district office, to sign some certificates, like those kinds of things, right?
Oh, yes, formalities. Yes, yes.
But it was closed, so, but I'll do it tomorrow. And so those kinds of things, I meet with the superintendent once a week, and just go over just what's going on. She informs us. We do agenda setting twice a month, you know, and so once at the very, very beginning of the month and then the day before the board meeting, so we know exactly what's going on. So those are kinds of things, and to stay engaged so that and keep people informed. And so I'm very visible on social media. Sometimes I've upset a lot of people and I've said a lot of people, but, you know, people are, what I do is at least I'm informing them. I want them to know what's going on, good, bad, or indifferent. I think transparency is fundamentally important. Mm-hmm. And if they disagree with you, then you go, oh, here's an area in which I can improve. Right? So also that, and I just took this upon myself as well. I write op-eds. You know, and I did this when I first was elected, just to inform people, this is what's going on. These are my observations.
Yes. Love transparency, because how could people trust something if there's no transparency? And the other point, you being on social media is great. We live in an era where there, younger generation is on social media, and seeing someone as you on the board being on social media and promoting cleaning day on Friday, that's relatable in a positive impact.
Absolutely. And also in trying to gauge what the young people are doing, I have a communications team that are made up of Gen Zers. And I ask them, like, what's going on? You know, tell me what's happening. And so what they do is they put out on my social media page celebrations of holidays and keep the public informed of what's going on.
Yes. That's awesome. Could you talk about some of your current priorities or initiatives that you're focusing on to support students and families?
So some of the initiatives that we have is, for example, we have parent cafes and grandparent cafes. Isn't that amazing?
If we had a camera, you should have seen Patty and I. Our faces were like...
Eyebrows went up on both of us. Yeah.
Well, I learned about this by watching the news. And I'm on the school board, right? So I'm watching KCRA News one night, and they're talking about Dover Elementary School has grandparent cafes. Because, you know, think about our families now. They're not necessarily mom and dad. Sometimes grandparents and aunts and uncles, extended family, are raising children. So they have these grandparent cafes. In fact, one's this Friday, where the grandparents come in, they talk with the administrators and what they can do to help their children in schools. So that's one of the things that are going, that's going over. And also some of the priorities. We have a new superintendent she's be here in the district for a year in May. Just increased the public awareness of letting people know what's going on. So there's a lot more social media presence in our schools and the like. So those are things to have students come to school. We also do this last month, I don't know if they do this in all the districts, but they had a March challenge because, you know, in college basketball, they have March Madness. Mm-hmm. Well, they do a March Madness, and that's getting students to come to school, and they have competition among all the schools.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so I happen to have visited Sheldon Academy, one of our elementary schools, in one of the first grade classes, and they said, this was at the end of February, and they said, we're going to have a March Madness challenge. I said, well, if you come to school every day, I'll come here and cheer you on. So they said, okay. So I created a sign, and I went and I taught them how to say hello and greeting in Fijians. I said, Mbula. So to all these first graders, say Mbula. So I showed up with a sign.
Sembula.
Yeah. And so they started coming to school. Well, some of the teachers were they weren't aware, because I just told one teacher and neglected to tell the principal. So they were like, oh my gosh, there's this person protesting.
Oh.
So just little things. But then I said, okay, I'll do it once a week. And then I started going out there and I thought to myself, you know, if Walmart can have greeters, greet the people, why can't students have greeters?
Wow, you should think outside the box.
To get kids to
yes,
go to school, right?
Yes.
Because if our funding is based on attendance, even though we're supposed to budget for enrollment. And so if I can help, if they're trying to cut our budgets here, what are some creative ways to get students to come to school? So I started cheering. And then the final two was Sheldon Academy and Early College High School. So just little things like that, and getting students involved in what the teachers and what our schools are doing individually. One of another school is called Cleo Gordon. They have literacy night and math night where they bring the parents in to work with the students. And so I had this one little girl, first grade, was telling me all of these facts. So I invited her to the Solano College studio to come and talk about what she likes to do, because she goes, I want to be a podcaster. I want to be an influencer. So I asked her mother, I said, bring her in. She came into the studio. So once a month, this first grade young girl.
Oh my gosh.
Coming in, and she said, today I'm going to critique a movie. And she did the whole thing. So I thought, you know, this is what we're talking about. If students have talents, how do we cultivate that? Because now she's going to want to go to school, and she's talking about this at school. And I sent the link, it was on YouTube, I sent it to the principal. So just little things like that, engaging parents and the children.
And
some of the great things.
You aren't the only one that should be doing this. It should be others, parents at each of those schools. And maybe the PTA could come up with some sort of award or something for attendance.
They do attendance. I believe they have awards. There is going to be an award for which school gets the most, perfect attendance or the best attendance. I think it's $5,000 or something like that.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
So they're competing.
Yeah,
yes.
Wow. That would be a motivator.
Yes. So it's nice. They line it up with March Madness, with basketball. Young people like sports. And they relate that to March Challenge, like a frame of reference. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
What steps is the district taking to support students' mental health and emotional well-being? And I'm going to preface this by saying I am a board member on NAMI.
Mm-hmm. What's
the
NAMI?
NAMI board, the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Oh.
And I was kind of involved as the district and the county were developing the wellness centers. And when they first started, there were just a few elementary schools that would do it. But each year they added more. And I think now every school in the district has a wellness center. And all it is a room where you can go and kind of escape the pressures of school or whatever pressures you want and have somebody there who's friendly and supportive. So what's other steps are we happening?
We do have wellness centers at our schools, in our elementary schools and the like. We also have, I think you know what, was it MTSS? That what is that? Where they have, it's called, multiple tiers of learning or something. It's like social emotional learning.
Okay.
A form of that. So they have like several tiers where they're teaching young people how to work with their emotions, I guess, and the like, and
cool.
how to use their words. I think we can do a lot better too, though. In terms of working, how do we get young people in terms of their well-being is investing more in the arts, investing more in theater, investing more in music, in sports, because when students can express themselves, because children want to move around. Part of their job is physical activity, right? And so when you're stuck in a classroom all day, they get frustrated and it affects the way they teach, they learn. So if they're mixing it up, you know, teaching them teamwork and teaching them work ethic in a sports program, in all, you know, team sports and the like, or music or theater, expressing their creativity. You take that, you can apply that to your classes, and you're interacting with other people. That increases people's well-being.
Absolutely.
We're such a society now where everybody's on their social media network or their phones, and they don't talk to each other. So I was at Rodriguez High School. This is like the summer, for spring, winter time, and they were doing a marathon run to raise funds for the school. And I saw these three students, that they could have been juniors in high school, young men, just chopping it up, talking to each other. And I made it a point to walk up to them and say, look at what you're doing. You're communicating with each other, and you're laughing, and you're enjoying this conversation, and not one of you has a cell phone. And they looked at me, and they went, and they kind of were shocked, you know, because I don't think they noticed that that's what they were doing.
Yes.
And they had this big smile on their face, like, wow, I guess that's what we did.
Yes. You know?
So that promotes students' well-being and mental health when they can talk to each other,
absolutely,
talk about it.
Community is essential.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
And less screen time for my younger ones. I have a 10-year-old. Well, he's going to be 10 June, and a 5-year-old, and I always promote less screen time. If they're running around in the yard or doing something like making robots, all this, it's better for them than being in front of the screen. I fully agree. We're social well-beings, and you need to do all these things to have better mental health.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And they learn from each other.
Yes.
Like when we were children, we had seasonal sports, so we would get together and make kites. You know, somebody would bring the newspaper, somebody would bring the midribs, you know, somebody would bring this, and then we'd get together and then create that, you know, and so that's how students solve problems, that's how children solve problems, you know, that's how they communicate with each other, and it increases their vocabulary.
Yes.
So all of that, you know, it literally, it takes a village to raise a child, right, and teach them how to communicate with one another. So we're doing some nice, good things, but now it's like, what can we do to improve and continue to foster that?
Yeah, that's amazing. And especially the way you're doing it, it's really positive.
Thank you.
How can parents best stay informed and involved in the district decisions that impact their children?
Show up.
So show up to the meetings?
Showing up to the school board meetings, showing up to the PTO meetings, because parents tend to do that in elementary school, and then they don't show up. Junior high school's less, and then high school is even less.
That's what I hear, actually.
Yes. And then we have, because Nelda Mundy, one of these schools, I'm calling out these schools, and they have a Watchdog Dads group. And these are fathers who take the time to come and volunteer at the schools. And they'll come during lunchtime and come and hang out in the halls and to see what the children are doing. They can't go into the classrooms and the like. But having that presence on campus. You know, some children grow up without fathers. We have different kinds of families. And so having that presence, children come up to them, talk to them. So that's how parents can get involved. They can join PTA meetings, PTOs. They can also, they have parent leadership committees that meet with the district from time to time and disseminate information that way as well. So yeah, that's how parents can get involved. And also, I was thinking about this, start volunteering.
Yes, definitely.
You know, and I know there are people work, but you know, think about this. When somebody goes, when you have a barbecue, everybody shows up, right? Mm-hmm. And so why can't we show up for our children? You have an aunt, an uncle, a big brother, a grandfather, a granduncle. You know, people can volunteer if it's just for an hour a week, just their presence there.
And it can make such a difference because one teacher to 33 kids, possibly. But your kid might not get any direct attention, whereas if you have some other volunteers, then at least they get something.
Yes, and a lot of these teachers really are very young. You have a 23-year-old, a 25-year-old in a class of, you know, 33 rambunctious sixth graders. You're not that much older, right?
Yes.
than these young people. They're pretty much your younger siblings. And when they look at you like a big sister, or you're the cool aunt. Mm-hmm. So yeah. You have a little bit of a challenge there, establishing your credibility or your as authority in the classroom. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually notice a big difference when my sons, they need volunteering, and my husband and I always volunteer. A, the teacher is happy. B, our kids are so confident when they see us coming there and being involved. And then the next day, all their friends and all of them were more social. They say, hi, Yama's mom or Yama's dad. And it's like, it becomes like this interconnected circle, only volunteering there.
And when they see you in public, they recognize
you.
Oh,
yes.
So everybody sees it, right?
Yes.
I think carpooling as well. We need to get our students to school. So, churches can do this. You know, people can volunteer to bring the grandchildren to school. On the way to school, think about the conversations that they're having on the way home from school.
Yeah.
So everybody, you know, can do their part to do that.
And going into that question, what resources are available for families who might be facing challenges like housing instability, language barriers, or access to technology?
We have a fantastic Family Resources Center at the district. And I think the city of Sassoon has it too, and Fairfield has it as well. They have all of these different resources, including like case management and the like. They have legal services, child care, financial assistance, health insurance guidance, immunizations, clothing closets, washing machines to help in different families. Yes.
So if a parent needs that, in case any of our listeners, mm-hmm. Who do you contact, the principal, or how do you get a hold of this place?
You would go to this Fairfield School District website, and you just go and type in Family Resource Center. That's right there. Or you can just Google it, because that's what I did. It's a Google Family Resource Center, Fairfield Sustained Unified School District, and it's where all that information is right there.
I love how our schools also support people with disabilities, physical disabilities or emotional, all of that. I have a friend whose 6-year-old son isn't walking yet, and he's not really speaking much, and he goes twice a week to therapy, to physical therapy, occupational therapy, and it's all paid for by the school district. And that is, I just think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's really, because those could be
expensive. Everybody else.
Oh.
And so she's homeschooled. She has 4 children. Mm-hmm. So this one child gets this one day or 2 days a week.
Fantastic. So we also just voted on our board in February, I think it was, or March, to keep H. Glenn Richardson open, and that is a school for students who are developmentally challenged and severely, on the spectrum, and just hopefully they can get into a non-public school, you know, and maybe transition. And so what we did was we kept it open for K-8. And then what the district did was to find placements for these students after 8th grade, so they're not just dumped or neglected after 8th grade.
Or dumped into the high school.
Yes.
regular population that, mm-hmm. where they would just not do well, probably.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, it's because we had to vote on it. It was, you know, really challenging because that place hadn't been kept up for a long time. And
financial.
Hadn't been invested in. Mm-hmm. And these are 15 students thereabouts. Mm-hmm. But now we have a pathway through the district to get these students, you know, as much of an education as we can give them with the resources that we have.
Yeah.
And so, and then just so much care. Yeah. And I got to tour that school. It's amazing. The students one-on-one with one specific, you know, teacher, caregiver, wow. walking them through the process.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And they have like a, you talk about a wellness center, a whole plate, a big room where the students, was one child was blowing bubbles. He just needed a break. And they had a supervisor there.
Uh-huh.
So, yes. Yeah, there's so many things that they're doing. You know, we look at school districts and we go, this is what's wrong with this, this is what's wrong with this school district. But when you look at all the programs that they're doing, mm-hmm. you know, to promote students.
Yeah, I think so many the times the schools become kind of the part of the family.
Yes, mm-hmm. they are, you know? Right? Yes.
And especially in situations where the parents maybe aren't able there. Maybe they both have to work in order to support the family. So it's just great that the schools can step in
yes.
those cases.
And then the after-school programs and the like, too, are very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. What's your vision for the future of education in Fairfield and Suisun?
Oh, my goodness. I have such a positive, just excited for what Fairfield and Suisun could be. And we were talking earlier about just what can we do with our career technical education programs. Mm-hmm. So we have a vocational path. We have a college path. And what I'm really excited about in terms of vision is our state senator, Christopher Cabaldon, has introduced a bill. It's called SB 640. And that bill would have students transfer right out of high school, if you have a C better grade, right into college, or into trade school where you don't have to apply to go to school, to college or to community college. And in community college also, you can learn all kinds of trades there. So instead of applying, if you have the grades, you know, make a C or better, you can transfer right into a community college. And from a community college with grades of C or better, you can transfer right into a university. Mm-hmm. And so that provides students more opportunities because there's so many barriers, unfortunately, for students to get into
really?
College. And they don't feel like, some of them are told they're not ready. Some of them are told that you should settle for this, that, and the other, right? And so instead of, then we don't have to rely, I think, on test scores as much. That's my thinking. And so students can think, wow, when I get through 12th grade, I have some place to go. So think about your 12th grade. A lot of students are nervous. Some
for sure.
are getting ready to go to college. Some are, what am I going to do? And so if they have a path, go, oh, I have this option. I think it alleviates a lot of the strain on students.
Is it difficult to get into a community college at this point?
Well, now it's free for the first 2 years, right?
Yeah.
But you still have to apply. I think you have to have a C or better. I'm not sure what the criteria are. I think you have to take some aptitude tests and the like, take remedial
really?
Classes, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So now instead you can just go right into it, right?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And my vision also is that I would like to, I think you were talking about bringing shop back, like welding classes. We used to have those in high school. So when you graduate from high school, you can go right into a $60,000 a year job.
Yeah, those plumbing jobs.
Right, those
you
plumbing jobs,
without.
Electrician jobs. Like we have that at the adult schools, right? But that's an adult school. Why don't we have them at the high school
community
where students can go right into
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah.
Or the community colleges. We have like welding classes at the community college, auto mechanics. We have that at the high school, auto shop at the high school.
We used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the Fairfield High School, you know. And so some of those, we have quite a few of those career technical education
okay.
programs.
They're coming back. Because
yes.
for so long, those were just kind of pushed aside
mm-hmm.
in favor of academics.
Yes.
And then we started getting kind of computer, like, heavy
mm-hmm.
to making sure everybody knew how to use a computer
right.
well.
Yes.
But some people just aren't built for that kind right. of thing. They're built to be the plumber
right.
or build a house or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you need computer skills now to be a plumber.
To do that.
I had somebody come to fix my washing machine. He had to look at it because everything's electronic now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
actually,
know?
Our Sue, when Lowe's came,
mm-hmm.
they had like an electronic iPad to do with that, so they have to know. Nowadays, our kids have to learn computers
yes.
and whatever major they want to do. It's like, it's a very competitive world.
Yes, it is. And my vision, real vision, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I've been asking people around for a while, and it just doesn't seem to be any political will or whatever will to do it, but I really fundamentally believe that we as a country need to convert our unit of measurement to the metric system.
You sound like my daughter.
It's true. You know,
I wouldn't know that.
We were trying to lay floor, and we're doing the math on 8 3/4 inch planks. And she goes, if this was
metric, yes,
everything would be tens.
Yes, yes.
It'd be so much easier.
Yes. Yeah. And so when I left Fiji in 1976, Fiji was just converting to the metric system. So we could be, the imperial system, you think of it as arbitrary, right? It's not set like the metric system is. And for all intents and purposes, we function in the metric system. When I go to this in my doctor's office, to a doctor's office visit, I'm on the scale, there's a calculator on the wall, changing whatever the kilograms to pounds. And I was at a fair, and this is what really had me thinking, at one of the student job fairs. And the nutritionist, the student came by, eighth grader, and she looked at the child and she said, how many grams of fat do you think is in this bag of Doritos? Mm. And I looked at her and I said, he's not studying that. He's being tested on imperial math. And some of them are learning, you know, in metric, through the metric system's unit of measurement. And I started asking this, and then I have these eighth graders, I have to go do some more research about this, but they say in their science class, they use the metric system as a unit of measurement. But again, they're still tested to the imperial system. Gee. And in the math, they're learning both. And so we're behind the rest of the world. So if our cars are electric, and our governor wants to convert us to all electric vehicles or the like by 2030, we can transition into the metric system in 5 years. So that's my 5-year vision.
We were talking about that when I was in school.
Yes. So why can't we do it
that
now?
That was over 50 years ago that we were talking about it, and it has not happened. So there's got to be some pushback from somebody. I'm not sure who it is.
So I'm going to reignite it.
Okay.
Right, because how much is it going to cost, right? We're changing signs. Because it's the miles to kilometers,
yes,
right? All of our ingredients are already
we've got them in both.
Yes.
On bags.
Yes. And our cars are also by kilometers and miles.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Coding does not use the imperial system. Mm-hmm. So if we want our students to get into coding, we are behind the rest of the world. We're the only country in the world that uses the imperial system.
And yet England does still, right?
Still, how backward are we? Then look at us, right? The sun has set on the British Empire a while ago. We don't want it to set on the American Empire.
Please.
And it will if we don't catch up with the rest of the world.
Yes, I
agree. So that is my mission in life in the next 5 years. And, you know,
who do we go to?
Well, I thought, you know, I would. Why don't I write the President of the United States?
Yeah, good luck.
And since he has decided to end the Department of Education, I can write the Governor, it's Tony Thurmond, who's a superintendent of schools, and our Senator, and our Assembly Member.
Hey, we're right behind you. We'll do the signature.
Great.
Send us your letter.
Yes.
And, you know, we'll use your letter as a basis, and we'll do it.
Thank you.
I believe in it, too.
Yes. I believe it because because we changed math. It keeps changing and changing ever since 2000 with No Child Left Behind. Our children are being left behind because they're trying to catch up to whatever the system is. Mm. And I teach at a community college. I was asking a student of mine who's going to a NASA in internship at symposium this week, and I said, by the way, in your science classes, what unit of measurement are you using? And he said, the metric system. And he goes, but we can do both. I said, why should we?
We had, and when I was in fourth grade in 1963,
wow. But my brain was
we had a new math curriculum foisted on us, and it was called SMSG, and we all said that stood for some mad scientist goofed. Do you remember that? That was before your time, probably.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
Anyway, the math, they've been messing around with our math for decades.
And why? And it's making students, and then the teachers then have to learn it. So the teachers are, even if they're lucky, a year ahead of the students.
Yeah.
So how hard that must be to change, to teach it if you're still learning it.
I worked with the Levin. Have you heard of the Levin?
No.
It's an after-school
program. Yes, we're interviewing one of the directors.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. And so I volunteered with them for quite some time. And these little third graders would come in with their math sheets, and I'm looking at it going, I have no idea what to do with this. I had to ask the director, you're going to circle all these lines and... No, I'm with you.
Yes.
Yeah, and math is a universal language.
It is.
So that's the thing. When I was 4, my dad gave me a book and said, this is basically everything you do is with math and it's universal. And my background is my parents are from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was that age coming, not to say anything about, you know, education system here, but I was way ahead. At the age that I came here, I was put in higher classes. Mm-hmm. And then as I lived here, I went to college. Then my math became worse. I think it's me too, but it was also, it wasn't expected from me to be there. It is expected for you to be that good. My nephews and nieces live in Greece. Mm-hmm. When they bring their math book and how ahead for their age they are, I'm surprised because those things, we studied it in college. Mm-hmm. While they do it, I would say, in high school. And just like you said and Patty said, I'm just, why is this happening? Because math is very important. That's the foundation of any major that you want. Math is what you want. My sons want to be robot engineers. We tell them, if you don't know measurement, the arm of that robot is going to be longer than the other one.
That's so true. You know, fun. When I came here from Fiji, I skipped a grade. Went from 7th to the 9th grade when I was 13 years old.
There you go.
And then, but then my grades fell apart. But I graduated from high school at 16. I had enough credits to graduate from high school at 15. Because our English was different as well. Mm-hmm. So I was a really good writer.
Yes, it's very proper when you study there. Yes, I had tutors, and when I came here, there was no slang word. And then when I was learning slang here, it was like, and then of course the elderly, my dad didn't want us to learn slang. However, you also want to fit in, and then you start using slang, and there you go. Now where I am,
it's fascinating. You know, I have to give you guys a copy of my book. I wrote a book called it's called In Betweens, Navigating a Colonized World. And I talk about growing up in Fiji, where we were colonized by the British. We were forced to speak English in schools. So we couldn't speak our native languages.
Even on the playground?
Nope. Not on the playground. We got spanked. You speak English.
I've heard that.
Yes. And so our teachers were from New Zealand, Australia, Great Britain. Wow. So this is how we learned to speak English. And so my father taught us, don't say gonna, don't say wanna, going to, want to.
Dipsy, yes.
So that's how we learn English. And so when I came to the United States, I came to Hawaii. Well, they speak pidgin English there.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, what? Like, where you ain't go? I stay waiting for you. I'm going, what?
And then soon you start talking that way.
And they go, oh, you sound weird. They tell them, yes, weird. And then I came to the mainland, and it's a whole other kind of English. Utah has a different dialect. California has a different dialect. No, and so and then there's Black English. I never learned that.
Ebonics,
right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then I studied. That's why I was interested in studying English, because I wanted to really understand linguistics. And you learn rules, and every language has rules. Pidgin English has rules. You know, Black English has rules.
Yes.
Like for example, in Black English, they don't pronounce the possessive. Like, this is Pam Mike. This is Merriam House instead of Merriam's house. And it's just a rule. It's not a mistake.
Why?
That's the way they spoke. But think about it. When slaves were brought to this country, they were brought from different parts of Africa. Different countries, different languages. Came to this country, they had to piece together a language that was foreign to them, and they weren't allowed to read and write.
And so nobody taught them.
So it's a little bit of English, a little bit of everything. So if you think about it, American is really what they created.
And
it's unique, right?
A lot of that is the reason that our education system is maybe not as robust as some others, because we have so many countries represented here.
Yes.
and so many levels of existence. And so it makes it harder to raise the bar because this person just really doesn't have the opportunity to get there. Right. So,
and then you look at English. English is a blended language.
Yes.
It's already blended. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before you throw it out
it's
there.
A little bit of French, it's a little bit of Latin, it's a little bit of this, right?
German, yes. Yeah.
And then you have, you know, coming from, you know, another country, and then you're looking at how the languages are brought. You need Spanish, you know, what do you call it? Spanish English. And
Spanglish.
Black English, Spanglish, right? All of that. So not having a national language, because we're not homogenous. Like in China, you're Mandarin, Cantonese, mm-hmm. right? In India, it's Urdu, Hindi, right? So in England, you speak English. In Korea, you speak Korean. But you come to the United States of America, which is a combination of all different, right? I mean, if we were speaking English, we'd be speaking the British English. That's what George Washington and them spoke.
Yes, indeed.
Right? So what is American English? We take out the U.
Well, and neighbor. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
We transpose R E R in theater and center.
And the way we speak in Georgia,
yes,
is very different than New York, mm-hmm. Massachusetts, California.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's after what almost 300 years.
Yes, yes. Like for example, if you go to anywhere in the country and say there were hella people at that party.
Yeah,
you must be from the Bay Area.
Right, that's right.
That is correct, actually. So I go to Texas. I mean, that's the only place I have been. It's so proper. And then I can hear it's different than hear the dialect. Yes.
Yes, yes. Y'all, for example.
Y'all. Yes.
I'd never heard that term until I came here. Well, y'all, yeah. What's y'all?
But yeah. Boy, it sure serves a purpose, though.
That's a great word.
Well, I wish we could adopt it. I spent a little time in Texas, yes. Like a week, and came back saying y'all.
It's a fun word.
It's a good word.
Oh my.
How do you and your fellow board members approach community feedback and concerns? We have been going off topic. I'm trying to get all of my questions answered for the listeners.
Two pages here.
Oh, so in terms of feedback and concerns, when we get emails and messages from the public, typically they would say the board president would respond on behalf of the board. For me, as a board president, I typically say, you know, if you're going to respond, CC the superintendent, so that they know what's going on, right? Because they're running the district, and they can better answer the questions. And then also, when you're speaking as an individual, not on behalf of the board, unless you're talking about the policy. That's like, this is what the board adopted. We can speak to that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of individual comments and the like, you have to tell them I'm an individual speaking on their behalf.
Yes.
So that's what we can do, right? And also, what we do in terms of, let's see, getting community feedback. I belong to a lot of different clubs.
Yes.
And so that's another way of informing them. Okay, so at our board, this is what we're doing, keeping them updated, what's going on, so that when they come to public, to meetings with public comment, we're not to respond because it's not on the agenda. And so we can take under consideration what they're saying and then possibly respond that way. And also, I invite people. I'm on the social media. I'm going to be at this corner on Friday from 8 to 9. Come out and
pick
and
up trash
us.
With me.
And every once in a while, one person would show up. You know, but
that's great. Even one person
show up. Yes.
Yeah. At one point I had a concern. I'm sure all of us parents have this concern. You know, it's a topic that most people don't want to talk. But for me, I always want to talk the topics that people don't, like the school shootings.
Yes.
Something like that is very stressful. And when it happens, you're just worried. I remember emailing the superintendent of Vacaville and he handled it very well. Things like that, how do you handle? And then there is ways that as myself, as a parent, I was asking, is there a way where we could get electronic tags? I was reading online where one staff member presses, then it gets the rest of the people alarmed that there's a school shooter, because usually the communication is where accidents happen in a bigger number of people get hurt because the other person doesn't know and they don't lock the door. So how do you handle something like that if a parent says, hey, you know, what are we doing for school safety?
That actually happened because everyone's, because social media, so much out there on social media, and they would have threats. And say, well, so-and-so threatened, a student made a threat, and so the parents were really, really concerned. What are we doing mm-hmm. about it? So what the superintendent was proactive. We're going to have a listening session. So we'll come to the school, all the parents, and we'll listen to what you have to say and provide suggestions on what we can do to keep your children safe. And then just keeping people informed, because the parents, I think, mostly what they want is to be informed. What are you doing? So if we can tell them, here's what we're doing, especially when something happened, because that's when the anxiety is heightened, right? There's a school shooting there. This could happen. What about my kids? So when that happens, the district says, okay, this superintendent is fantastic about that. She goes, okay, this happened here at this school. Here's what we're doing in our district to alleviate that. If you have any questions, come to the district. So at least they're saying, okay, we're aware of what's happening out there. If you have any questions, come talk to us. And then we'll provide a listening session. So a bunch of parents took their kids out of school and said, well, we're so afraid because we don't know if the district is doing anything about it, or if they're doing it, they're not doing enough. And the superintendent took an active step and said, okay, let's do this at your school. And so she's really good
about that.
So you have to be in tune
with
the community.
I love the word that you said, informed. Most of the time, my husband and I, when we want is being informed on everything that happens. If there's a safety protocol, we need to know. Yes. Because if you're not informed, how can you help your children?
Yes.
Because as much as we are scared, you want to educate your children. If there's a school shooter, the steps to take. So being informed is very important.
Yeah. So when parents come, they don't panic, right?
Yeah.
Because when you hear school shooting, everybody shows up. You want to call, everything's in the data. But you say, okay, if there's a school shooting, here's a process. And you're going to be anxious, but you call this person. And kind of have a call center, right? So, okay, so parents know where to call in, so you're not jamming up the system, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, and just to keep people informed, here's what you do. So when they come, it's okay, this is what happened. Parents already know what to do. They know where the children might be. I was thinking about this too, and I don't know if this happens in the high schools and the K-12, but students who are deaf, they can't hear the sirens and the like. They have,
lights.
Like, the lights, in the classrooms, in the hallways and the light.
So
I never thought to check that. I should check that.
What are you really proud about? What are some of the standout programs or schools who are making a real impact?
Oh my gosh. So we have Early College High School. Started with about, a couple of 100 students or so. Now we're growing to almost 1,000 students. And these young students are attending high school and community
and college. Yeah, we have that in
Vacaville. And it's fantastic.
Too.
So when they graduate from high school, they've got 2 or 3 degrees, associate's degrees. And what's so wonderful is seeing the maturity level. Obviously, you talk about students who have different paths, right? Students who typically go to like an early college high school, they're ready. They're on a path. They're determined. They know exactly what they're going to do. And so that just takes them right into college, goes right in. They get a degree when they're 19 years old.
Yeah.
I have so many students doing that. That's one of the things we'd have. We also have our sports programs are up and coming. 3 of our high schools, Army Hill High School, Fairfield, and Rodriguez, all were in the playoffs last year.
Wow.
I think Rodriguez got to 2 playoff games. Our Rodriguez High School basketball team this year got to the playoffs.
Are you in Monticello District or...
I believe so, yes. But I think, yes, we were. I think we've changed. Now our students are going to have to go to Sacramento. They're in a different league, I believe. I think Fairfield and Army. I think because the district is so small and the competition, they take each other out. I don't know what it is, but that's where it is.
Okay.
We have golf teams now for girls and our women, girls flag football team.
Oh.
So we're bringing that, so many things to do. And then also with I think there was a $28 million bond, a grant that came out in 2022. Our superintendent is now spending it in our schools. So we have art programs now at a couple of our schools, Grange and Cordelia, bringing them back. We have the Public Safety Academy that had band for the first time last year, and then over 100 students were, and I went to the winter concerts. Fantastic. So these are really cool, great accomplishments. We have a brilliant Future Farmers of America program where our students compete also in extemporaneous public speaking, and they do really well. We have like academic decathlon. Our Rodriguez High School and Early College High School students are involved. So there's lots of different things that are highlighted that our students are doing that we should brag more about.
Well, congratulations. That's wonderful.
Lots of areas to improve, but those are wonderful highlights in our district.
Fabulous. We're going to jump down to accountability and achievement. So how does your district measure student success beyond just test scores?
My goodness, I guess through graduation rates, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Because that's the only other measure we have, because we have tests, and that's why I'm so against standardized testing. Because if you have students do projects, for example, like one of my wild ideas is to have students do projects from kindergarten onto high school and build a portfolio. You know how we used to have scrapbooks?
Yeah.
And build a portfolio. So this is what I'm learning in kindergarten. So it could be however way the student wants to put it together. It could be sticks, it could be posters, it could be stickers, it could be action figures. At the end of the year, I was like, this is what I learned with all this. Yeah. Take that to the first grade, right?
And
the
continue on.
Yes. So the teachers can see that as kind of an assessment. This is where these children are. This is kind of what they learned. The child can explain it to them. What did you learn in first grade? Mm-hmm. Right? So by the time they graduate from high school, you have 12 mm-hmm. years or 13 years worth of information about this child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in there, you'll see what their talents are, yeah. what their interests are, because that'll be highlighted in
there. That's wonderful. Actually, our kids' school does that every
project
year.
Project-based learning kind
yes,
of thing?
Yes, they get at the end of the portfolio of everything they did at the end of the year, and then we read it. Some things are really interesting because we didn't even know about them, and it's something that's like, wow, I didn't know that. So it's really interesting and effective.
And when your child can explain it to you, and you go, wow, you learned that? Because that's how you know that they know, if they can explain it to you.
Correct. That's very true. Yeah.
So I think if you do that and couple that with standard, with some form of test, like if you convert to the metric system, that would be a great standardized test. Because whether you're in Alabama or San Francisco or California, it's the same test,
yeah.
right? But now it's different.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does your district do supporting students with special needs and ensure they feel included in the broader school community?
More and more now, we have psychologists at our schools, counselors. I don't know how often they get to see the counselors, especially now that they're cutting funding for counselors and the like. But I think in terms of helping students with special needs, like I said, we just extended, we voted to keep H. Glenn Richardson open, and that's going to be the grade level is going to be eighth grade.
Yeah.
We're helping students with severe special needs. And we have a wonderful director of special education who is really involved in the community and helps families and the like. And also I think the Family Resource Center is a good place to help students with special needs and the like. And we have wonderful special ed teachers. My gosh. I mean, you talk about a thankless job. You know, it's like constant. Every day, sometimes you're probably doing the same thing, learning the same thing every day with the same student, relearning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's some of the good things that we're doing. I think there's always areas to improve. We can always do better mm-hmm. with our students because our needs are different. You know, and so how do we teach these students according to their...
Yes, their needs.
Their needs and their talents mm-hmm. and the like. You know, like what can they do? And emphasize that as opposed to what can't they do.
Yeah. I like your positive always. You put it as positive, mm-hmm. not negative.
Yes, because language is so important.
Yes.
You know, and I've been
yes.
thinking about it a lot.
It's empowering
yes.
when you use positive
Absolutely.
Language. Absolutely.
Yes. I attended a training the last week, the California School Boards Association. We're talking about how do we promote, you know, wellness and the like. And I said, let's look at the language that we're using with our children. It's like, what are their needs? Like, what are their talents?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have to get students to catch up. Catch up to what? You know, they all have, if we say that students have different learning styles, mm-hmm. then we have to meet them at their learning styles.
I
because you'll be catching up, right?
I love that. Yes, because even myself as growing, you always felt like you had to catch up. While my strengths could be in one mm-hmm. area and my weakness could be another. And then learning that, I'm the same like you said with my kids. I look, where's their strength?
Yep.
If there's a weakness, maybe that's something that we can work on. It's mm-hmm. not like go catch up to this person or that standard.
Yes, because now you're comparing.
Yes.
Right? You're catching up. So yep. using positive language, what are their talents? How can we apply that talent to this particular curriculum, to this subject and the like? All of those things. Terms like minority, I think is disparaging because minority means less than.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a measurement. So when you say somebody is a minority, just the word itself saying that you're less than something I'll give you an example. They say in 2020, 2040, our country is going to be majority-minority. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
If you're the majority, you cannot be a minority.
You can't be both of them.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's math.
I can't universal.
Back to math. Yeah.
And you said everything is math. So positive language is fundamentally important. Yes.
And I think there are dopamine receptors in mm-hmm. the brain that respond to positivity
yes.
in a different way than yes. the negative.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
There's something that goes on. This is my NAMI.
Yeah.
No, you're 100% mm-hmm. right. When it's positive, we feel good about mm-hmm. ourselves.
Yeah.
We want to do more. When something negative we hear, you want to like crawl in a place.
Hide.
Yes. And then you feel like the whole emotions the whole day. So there's dopamine there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, from a teacher perspective, which I was for 20 years, and anytime we start talking about learning styles with kids, makes me so nervous because yes. I really want to do that, but my goodness, I have my own teaching and learning style.
Yes.
And so to go out of that and try to reach mm-hmm. those other folks mm-hmm. that don't match me,
yes,
it's so hard.
It is.
So I always feel concern for the teachers yes. who are trying to do their very best.
Especially the new teachers.
Especially.
Especially yes. the seasoned ones, they've been around and they know what to expect, right?
Yes.
I'll give, for example, like when you're in college, right, for example, in teaching, I can there's a different dynamic in the classes. 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and I love teaching early morning classes because those are the students coming right out of high school. They're used to being up at 8 o'clock. Mm. So they're lively. Mm-hmm. 10 o'clock, you know, the students who are experienced students in college, they take the 10 o'clock classes. That's when they wake up. The 9 o'clock classes are the hardest because these are the experienced students who couldn't get into any of those classes. They take 9 o'clock where they're physically there, but they're not mentally awake yet because they roll out of bed and come to school.
Well, they were up until 3 o'clock last
exactly.
night doing what? I don't know.
That paper that was due at 8 o'clock.
Well, we could talk for days.
I know, this is fantastic.
But, is there anything we didn't cover that you feel is important for families to hear today?
I think it's really important to engage, whether you're a grandparent, whether you're an aunt, whether you're a big brother, whether you're a big sister, in the community, to really engage our children. And also, I think, and volunteer, if you can, even if it's an hour a week, if you can be a crossing guard, be a cheerleader, come in, you know, cheer the students on. I think that's so important. And also, positive reinforcement is important because children believe what we tell them. They mimic, you know, especially first graders. Everything is literal to them. So when we compliment them, it's so important. What I tell people is like, when you see a child, tell them how beautiful they are. Mm-hmm. You know, and so one of my assignments for all of my classes, and I think this is something for everybody to hear, is pay one person a compliment.
Yeah. Tell them something that's true
yes.
about them.
I love your hair color. Something like that. That's a great vest, right? There's something positive. And then I tell my students to say, at first people aren't used to that. That person's weird, but you know what? At the end of the day, somebody said something to them. They remembered that, right? And so... So now when these students leave, I say, what's your homework? Pay a stranger a compliment. That.
Oh, I love that.
And it's infectious. And when you look at a child and you tell them they're so cute or their hair is beautiful, they just beam.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And it's like, I have younger children. It also becomes their core memory when
yes.
they're adults that there was positive.
Yes.
Mom said I was handsome, I was smart.
Yes.
So they remember that as being the opposite or saying nothing. I totally agree
it's
with that.
It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Where do students get their children get their self-esteem? I'll give you one last example. That child who came into the podcast, her father came in too. And I kept telling, I said, repeat after me. I'm beautiful and I'm smart. And the dad pulled me aside. He goes, I don't want her to be conceited. And I said to him, the world is going to beat her up. Where else is she going to get her confidence but from her father? And you need to remind her of that.
I fully agree. Parents have a big role in their upbringing
yes,
of their children.
Because society, right?
Yes.
There's so much influence.
Yes.
And if they have that, those two people who they mean the most to them.
I fully agree.
Yes.
And my last question is, where can families go to stay updated and connected with the district news and events?
We have Parent Square, where children, students, parents are informed of what's going on. We also have the FSUSD News that goes out, tells the people what their information of what's going on in the district. We also have something called Engage, and it's both in Spanish and in English, where students can read all of that and see what's going on in terms of events. And also at each of the different school sites, they'll keep parents apprised of what's going on, here's what to expect this week, next week, and what the activities are and the like.
So, through email.
Yes. Through email, through social media, they're really good. And what I do also is like I send it out on my social media pages so people know what's going on, all kinds of events. Yeah. Just keep people involved, right?
I love your energy.
Thank you.
I love your positivity and your smile. You're just a beautiful person. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation. This is wonderful.
We are honored to have you. We had great conversation probably before this, probably 2 hours now. But we could talk another hour.
Keep going.
This is wonderful. You guys are amazing because I looked you up too, and I was like, listen to some of your podcasts. Like, this is fantastic.
Thank you. Patty and I are a great team.
Yes, you are.
You know, just for everyone, I admire Patty from the day that I have met her. She's so strong, resilient, and with all the obstacles that come to her life, she takes it just like you. Positive, mm-hmm. and she still goes to the community. Every time I call her, I'm a volunteer here. I'm cooking this for this person. And that inspires you when you see someone at her position doing all this. And it's like, what am I doing? I better be doing something too. With that note, we're going to say goodbye. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.